This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Serious climate news out there. One report suggesting this from the journal Geophysics Research Letters that the Arctic Ocean could be ice-free in summers by 2030 at the nearest. What consequences will this have? Another article talking about, we talked about this on the air yesterday and just did a major video about it for our Patreon page, about how if we get to, I think it was 1,200 or 1,400 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere, the stratocumulus clouds, is that recalled? Just like they can't hold together anymore. And so the Earth starts warming at a super fast rate. Should we be alarmed? Dr. Michael Mann is on the line with us, distinguished professor of meteorology, the director of the Earth Systems Science Center at Penn State University, recipient of this year's Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement, and that's sort of the Nobel Prize for the Environment, and the author of several books, The Madhouse Effect, Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy. His website, michaelmann2ns.net. Dr. Mann, and you can tweet him at Michael E. Mann. Dr. Mann, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Always good to be with you.
We have been talking for years, and it seems that every year our conversations become more strident, doesn't seem like quite the right word, concerned, worried, whatever. The two issues that I just brought up, can you speak to those?
Sure. This is a mantra of mine, that uncertainty isn't our friend. Too often we hear the critics, those who argue against taking action on climate, that there's uncertainty in the science and that somehow that means that we shouldn't take the actions necessary to avert dangerous climate change. But what we're learning and what we see continuing to unfold year after year is that, if anything, uncertainty is cutting against us. We're finding changes that are happening faster and with a greater magnitude than our models, say, 10 or 20 years ago predicted. That having been said, it's also important not to panic. We're not outside of the range of what the models predict, not outside of the range of the sorts of impacts that we have been looking to avert, basing our policies for reducing carbon emissions upon. We're not looking at anything that's outside of the range of what the predictions have said, but what we are seeing is that in many respects, we're coming in at the upper end of that range. You cited two things in particular, the disappearance of sea ice. Now, many of us said years ago that the climate models weren't capturing some of the key processes that allow sea ice in the Arctic disappear, to fall apart, literally. The models in the past have been fairly crude in the way that they deal with the mechanical properties of sea ice, and that's led to sea ice being too stable in many of the model simulations. And if you look at what's unfolding, the rate at which we're losing sea ice in the Arctic, we are at the upper end of what the models predicted 5 or 10 years ago. We're seeing sea ice disappear faster than the models said it should. Some models said we should continue to have sea ice out to 2100. Some models said, maybe we don't get past 2050. What we're seeing is that if we extrapolate the trajectory that we're on, we could see an ice-free Arctic by 2030. And again, it's at the upper end of the range of the models.
What does that do to weather?
Well, the Arctic is sort of our refrigerator here in the Northern Hemisphere. The ice reflects away sunlight, so it helps cool the planet down. And something we've learned is that what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. It's not like Vegas. When you lose that sea ice in the Arctic and you allow heat to escape from the Arctic Ocean into the atmosphere, that can actually change the properties of the jet stream, and it can change the weather patterns that we see in the U.S. And in fact, more than a decade ago, there was a study that predicted that the loss of Arctic sea ice would lead to worsened drought in California. And we've seen that over the past decade, as the jet stream has tended to be steered north of California up to higher latitudes, denying it the rainfall and snow that it typically gets. Of course, now what we're seeing this season is that literally when it rains, it pours. When you don't have that pattern of worsened drought and you do happen to get the storms, the winter storms coming through. A warmer atmosphere holds more moisture, so you get bigger rainfall events and you get bigger snowfall events, like what we're seeing in California this winter. So we get more extremes on either side. And those unusual weather patterns are being impacted by the disappearance of ice way up in the Arctic. Again, a reminder that there are surprises in store. There are things that we didn't anticipate that are happening, and these aren't welcome surprises.
Yeah, and what about this loss of, would that be considered albedo effect, the reflectivity of the clouds if we reach a point where the clouds themselves start falling apart and more of the sun's heat, the sun's light is able to hit the surface of the Earth and warm the planet?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Tom. There is an interesting commonality between these two studies that you cited in that the disappearance of sea ice in the Arctic allows the Arctic Ocean to absorb more incoming sunlight, and so the Earth warms even faster. We call it a positive feedback, but it's not a good thing. It's a bad thing. It's a vicious cycle. The same thing can potentially happen with clouds like these stratocumulus clouds. These are low cloud decks that their main effect is to reflect sunlight back to space, just like the ice does. And so the more of these clouds you have, the more of that incoming heating of the sun, heating by the sun, that the ice can reflect or the clouds can reflect back out to space. And that is a cooling factor that offsets some of the warming from increasing greenhouse gas concentrations. What this one study, and it's important to state some caveats up front. This is just one study using one model. This has not been reaffirmed, validated by other research groups using different modeling approaches. And moreover, they've really looked at a process that is mainly relevant to the tropics, and they've extrapolated that globally, but the global extrapolation may not be appropriate. So some of the conclusions, or at least some of the headlines that resulted from that study, may have overstated the impact that this is likely to have. Maybe an additional warming of 6 to 8 degrees in the tropics, but there's some evidence that we would not see that effect here in middle latitudes or much of the rest of the Earth. And so it wouldn't warm up the whole planet as much as one might have gathered from the headlines. And there's one other really crucial point here. Aside from the fact this is just one simulation, one research group, it hasn't yet been reaffirmed by other researchers, but also they're looking at an effect that only kicks in at 1,200 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere. The warming that you get from 1,200 parts per million CO2 in the atmosphere. That is more than four times pre-industrial levels. If we get anywhere close to that, we're going to have lots of other problems to worry about. So let's hope that we never even get close to the threshold at which this additional effect happens.
Yeah. Apropos of that, am I remembering correctly that after 9/11, when there were three or four, or maybe more days where there was very, very little jet air traffic, and thus a lot fewer of the very, very high, kind of cloud stripes that are caused by the water vapor coming out of the jet engines, turning to ice crystals, that actually altered the temperature of the planet slightly?
Very slightly, and it was I would say a natural experiment, but it wasn't a natural experiment. It was a human imposed experiment, but it was an experiment that allowed scientists to look at the effect of these contrails, not chemtrails for your listeners, right, which are pseudoscience, contrails are produced from the moisture that comes out of the back of a jet engine, and that moisture at high altitudes forms clouds, just like rising moisture in the atmosphere forms clouds, and those clouds can have an influence on the absorptive and reflective properties of the atmosphere. Now, these high clouds, these contrails, have the same sort of impact that high cirrus clouds have. They're actually potentially a warming influence. Those low clouds we talked about, those stratus decks, mm-hmm. Those have a cooling effect because they're very low, and the main effect is the reflection. It's like you painted the surface of the Earth white, or you covered it with ice. But these high clouds, as you alluded to, this water vapor high up in the atmosphere can actually increase the greenhouse effect, so it can have a warming effect. Hmm. And that experiment that played out for several days in the wake of 9/11 allowed atmospheric scientists, it gave them a control We could look at the properties of the atmosphere when you didn't have all that air travel and all those contrails, and allowed them to make an estimate of what the effect is. And it's a minor effect. It's way down sort of in the noise compared to what we're talking about, the sort of warming that we're talking about if we don't act on the underlying problem of increasing greenhouse gas concentrations from fossil fuel burning.
We're talking to Dr. Michael Mann, Distinguished Professor of Meteorology and the Director of the Earth Science Systems Center at Penn State University. Dr. Mann, in the minute or so we have left, where are we at right now? I mean, how dire are things? How quickly do we have to act? Do we really just have 11 years left? You know, where are we at?
Yeah, we would have written a book called Dire Predictions if the predictions aren't dire. If we fail to do anything, then we will be in forever more damaging climate change impacts. We will see even more damaging extreme weather events than what we've seen so far. We'll see even more destructive superstorms, worse drought, worse extreme heat. There's no new normal. Things will continue to get worse and worse if we continue to burn fossil fuels. The good news is there is still time to limit our carbon emissions so that we don't cross some of these truly dangerous thresholds, like a 2 degrees Celsius warming of the planet, 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit warming of the planet. To avoid warming the planet more than 2 degrees Celsius, we need to bring our carbon emissions down probably about 5% a year for the next 10 to 12 years if we want to avoid 1.5 degrees Celsius warming. And we're very close to that already. Then we have to bring those emissions down even faster, closer to 10% a year. It's still doable. It's not physically impossible. The only obstacle here is political will, is the willingness to take the actions necessary to move away from the damaging impact of burning fossil fuels towards a solution that already exists, renewable energy. We just have to scale it up. We have to incentivize it. We need policies that will lead us down that path.
Yeah, and it's truly extraordinary how the fossil fuel industry and the petrobillionaires have literally captured an entire political party and seemingly some of even our news media. It's just that, you know, this climate denial is insane. Dr. Michael Mann, you are doing God's work, sir. You are just absolutely brilliant.
As are you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So glad to have you on the program. Dr. Mann, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. You can check out his website at michaelmann.net. His most recent book, The Madhouse Effect, the winner of the Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement, this year's essentially the Nobel Prize for the Environment. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, and you can tweet him at Michael E. Mann, M-A-N-N. We'll be right back. And welcome back, Phil in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, Phil, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom, it's Bill, but...
Oh, Bill, I'm sorry.
That's okay. With regard to an insurrection occurring...
Yeah.
John F. Kennedy told us that there were people trying to acquire power in this nation through covert means, because he knew the only way that they could operate is in darkness.
Right.
They do not come out into the light. Because their greatest fear is that their neighbors will know who they are and what they stand for. I've never seen anything disappear as fast as a Trump bumper sticker. Have you?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen a Trump bumper sticker.
You know, on my car, I have three statements. My Bernie sticker, which I knew I didn't have to take down. And it's a sign that says impeachment on my back window in red, white, and blue.
Mm-hmm.
And a bumper sticker I had made that said, if you believe things that aren't true, you're delusional or Republican.
Good one, Bill.
Now, you would think that I had to have it made. You would think that people would confront me about those things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only 5'6". I'm a little bit of nothing. My heart's totally bypassed. I've had three strokes. I'm no threat to anybody. Nobody confronts me about any of those things because they're cowards, Tom. They really are cowards. Kennedy was right.
Yeah.
The only way they can operate is through covert means. They need the darkness.
But I would argue, Phil, that the cowards are the most dangerous. Bullies are almost always cowards. In many ways, Hitler was a coward. I mean, doesn't that concern you that Dylan Roof was a coward.
No, it doesn't concern me, and the reason is they're ignorant. They're the ignorant that Eisenhower's brother.
Well, they're ignorant of what you and I know, Phil, but they're not ignorant of what they know. They have a coherent worldview and a belief system that has been given to them by billionaire Rupert Murdoch that if they follow that, it certainly enhances the situation of billionaires all over the world and autocrats and oligarchs, which I would argue is what Murdoch is or wants to be. And it's real to them. It doesn't
stand up in the light of truth and in the judgment of our neighbors. Tom, we're all being made more aware now. More aware. The ugly came out. Barack Obama was prejudices comeuppance. And who told us when people show you who they are?
Yeah.
Believe them.
I think that was Maya Angelou.
Maya Angelou, yes. But we do know who they are, and we do believe them now. And that is the difference. I feel it in my bones.
Hmm. Well, I hope you're right, Bill. I really, truly do. And it does, I do have this sense that I know that huge change is happening right now, and we're on the verge of much larger change. And certainly the changes of the Democratic Party, I think, are indications of that. And but whether we can do it systemically, whether we can do it nationwide, it's going to be a hell of a challenge, particularly when the Supreme Court said that the billionaires can basically take control of our political process, which they've done ever since since the Reagan Revolution. Bill, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Sun City, Arizona. It's 22 minutes past the hour and change. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 23 minutes past the hour. Jesse in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Yeah, I just have a question. It's like, why do you always badmouth the white Christians? But I hear you stick up for Muslims and Catholics all the time.
I am a white Christian,
like,
Jesse.
Yeah, I've got this thing about white Christians, like you think every single one of them vote for Trump. I'm just kind of curious. That I was going to say, in my opinion, anyways. In my opinion, I don't think that's helping your cause at all, because there's a lot of Christians in this country.
Yeah, I didn't say white Christians, Jesse. I said white evangelicals. And
well, those are Christians.
Many Christians are evangelicals, but specifically the white evangelical movement and its leadership, insanely corrupt leadership. I mean, you've got Jerry Falwell Jr., who, when you can pull him away from this pool boy that he gave $1 million to and jobs to and flew all over the world with him, is still supportive of Donald Trump. It's just bizarre, this whole thing with the white evangelicals. And that's my issue with them, is that they have tried to aggressively get political.
So your issue is with one guy, but so you generalize them?
So no, it's not one guy. Well? It's with the white evangelical movement. It's not white Christians. As I said, I am a white Christian. There are a lot of white Christian churches, or largely white Christian churches, that are not running these kinds of scams, frankly, that we see coming out of the white evangelical movement.
Don't get me wrong, because I'm Mormon, so I hear a lot of guff from Christians all the time. But I was just kind of wondering, cause, like, I watch your show a lot. Like, I'll listen to Rush Limbaugh and then I'll watch your show, because I like to be informed on both
sounds
sides.
Like whiplash.
So and then I'm just like, it seems like you have like this thing against like these white Christians. I'm like, why?
No, it's not
like,
white Christians. It's like, white evangelicals.
God,
Jesse, perhaps as a Mormon, you can't distinguish. But among the white Christian, or among the Christian churches in general, there's all kinds of denominations and all kinds of groups, and there is this one slice which does not represent the majority of Christians, white or otherwise, in the United States. And that slice is the so-called evangelical movement, the people who have, and there's a core set of beliefs that are associated with the white evangelical movement that are not shared by all the other Christian churches or with the evangelical movement. And the white evangelicals, the Jerry Falwells, the Pat Robertsons, they're led largely by these television preachers, have by and large, thrown in with the Republican Party since the Reagan era. You know, Ronald Reagan's vice president brought in his son to be the liaison to the white evangelical movement in the 1980s. That was George W. Bush. And that's the work that he did for both Ronald Reagan and for his daddy when his daddy was president, was to politicize the white evangelicals. And it worked, and it has stuck. And today, even now, if you drive around and listen to Christian radio, and you're in Fort Collins, I don't know, I don't believe that that's, you know, as large a Mormon community as, say, Salt Lake City, so you can probably get them. They rent time on radio stations, and, you know, if it costs them $100 an hour, if they can, most of what they're doing is, you know, pitch for money. If they can make $130 an hour, then they keep that going. And you listen to these white evangelicals on the radio, and they're getting political. They're talking about, you know, how wonderful Donald Trump is. And the main issue that Trump has used to seize them is abortion. And again, the white evangelical movement, by and large, was in favor of a woman's right to choose right up until the 1970s. I think 78 or 79 was the year it all changed, when it got corrupted. Jesse, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
We'll be back with more of your calls. What do you think if Trump refuses to leave, like Michael Cohen said? Tom Hartman here with you. Kim Jong-un basically eating Donald Trump's lunch, quite literally. Donald Trump left before the lunch that was prepared for them could be eaten. I don't know if Kim sat down and said, hey, you know, look at this spread. I'll eat it now that Donald's gone. But it's absolutely amazing. We've got this guy who is such a lousy negotiator. He ruined, you know, he declared bankruptcy six times. He ruined, you know, probably 50 businesses or more of his own businesses, not to mention other people's businesses. And he's proclaiming he's such a brilliant negotiator, he can just fly over there and work it out with Kim. Right. Elizabeth in West Hollywood, California. Hey, Elizabeth, what's up?
Hi. You know, you're talking about Trump, and my perception, you know, is misspeaking, like saying, you know, she's rich, was the beginning of Alzheimer's. And, you know, it's only because I've experienced it twice in my life, but I've been watching the show on the A&E channel. It's called Biography, and they've been doing a biography about Trump. And his father died of Alzheimer's.
Yes.
And I think he needs to be evaluated before he's allowed to run for president again. You know,
don't you think it would be more evident? I mean, I've seen the side-by-side videos of Donald Trump in the 1980s and Donald Trump today, and clearly there's been some cognitive impairment. You know, he repeats himself over and over again and things like that. He's lost some of his capacity, but he doesn't seem to me. I mean, my mother died of Alzheimer's. I'm very familiar with how it goes, and it doesn't seem to me like he's anything close to that.
Well, but it's the beginning of it.
Yeah.
And should this man have his finger on the nuclear button? I mean, really?
Yeah, I'm more concerned with his foundational mental illness, which he's apparently had since he was a child. You know, this morbid narcissism, this very, very destructive narcissism, and sociopathy. I mean, that really, really scares me. Elizabeth, thank you for the call. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
I don't know what to call it yesterday. It was very sickening and sad. I just feel like, why don't we just get on with this impeachment process? I guess I might be rushing it, but if it was Obama or if it was even Bill Clinton, I think the Republicans would be marching on the White House right now.
You know, I mean, if they did the things that Trump has done.
Excuse me?
You mean if they had done the things that Trump... I would say if they had done even 1% of the things that Trump has done.
Exactly. And basically, it's a double standard. And, you know, we don't have to march to the beat of Fox News or right-wing radio. You know, basically, we have you and everybody else in the Democratic Party. And I'm just feeling like, what else do we need? What else is going to take for him to ruin this country I mean, does he have to ruin the economy as well for people to get fed up? I mean, and enough
yes.
is enough?
Yes, typically that's what does it, Charles. Typically, if the economy is going up when a presidential election happens, the president gets reelected. If the economy is going down when the presidential election happens, the president does not get reelected. Excuse me. So, yes, the economy has a lot to do with it, which is why he's leaning so hard on Jay Powell and why a lot of people are pretty freaked out that this Fed chair, and in fact, we're going to be talking with one of the world's leading economists about this, I believe tomorrow, is it, or is it next week? It's tomorrow. Yeah. So stay tuned for that.
So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anymore about just even the look of any impropriety. We've gone from a president like President Obama to straight garbage.
Yeah.
And we're supposed to sit up here and respect it, respect the office, listen to these people that's ruining our lives with all of the stupid policies. And the evil stuff that they're doing at the border, separating kids. And I think I learned from you that there are even some of these kids have been abused sexually.
5,000 of them.
I mean, when is enough going to be enough where we cut the plug and say that's it? Because, I mean, I don't think our democracy could stand this. I just really don't. And you have someone like Michael Cohen is saying, that's, you know, even propping up, you know, the discourse among the races, I mean, I'm afraid to think of what else could happen. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I am too, Charles. I absolutely am too. Thank you. Thank you for the call. John in Marne, Michigan. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'll get on topic, but I liked your comment about Trump and Art of the Deal. I got a question about that. Is why was he just over in Vietnam? Didn't he tell us last time that he met with him that we don't have to worry about nuclear threat from North Korea?
Yes. In fact, he tweeted, and I quote, "There is no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea," end quote. That's what Trump tweeted. It's obviously a lie. Trump, when he first went over there, Kim had an estimated 5 to 10 nuclear weapons. Now they estimate U.S. intelligence. I mean, Trump doesn't listen to that, but he listens to Fox News. But U.S. intelligence is now saying 25 to 50 nuclear weapons, and all of them would be larger than the Hiroshima bomb.
Yeah, back to the lie again. The reason I called was about the peaceful the possibility of the peaceful transition of power in a 2020 election.
Right.
You know, I think we're all hopeful that'll happen. With knowing this guy's personality, there's no surprise in it whatsoever. Trump never gave a damn about this country. It was only what the presidency could bring to him and his family. That's what was in it for him.
Certainly seems that way. Certainly seems that way.
Yeah.
Thank you, John,
for
the call. Tom in Seal Beach, California. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind today?
Well, I think that a lot of people haven't been approaching climate change with the right mind frame. We're long past being able to decide whether or not we're going to pay for climate change. We're going to pay for it. And our choices now are...
We are right now, Tom. And the insurance industry paid out, what, $70 billion last year in additional things that seem to be related just to climate change just in North America?
Well, just a few days ago, there was a viral email or video on the internet of Dianne Feinstein chastising some school kids for supporting the Green New Deal, and her big complaint was that they weren't providing a way to pay for it.
Right.
Well, the people that are doing nothing about climate change are, making us, we're going to pay for it.
You're absolutely right.
It's over.
Yeah, and we're going to pay for it in multiples of what it would cost to mitigate it right now. If for every dollar that we don't spend now, we're going to have to spend $100, a decade from now, and we're going to have to spend $1,000 two decades from now. That's how quickly. I mean, it's going up by log scale rather than linear scale. And
that's why I'd like to urge your listeners to look into the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. It's H.R. 763, was introduced in the House last month. And it's
by whom?
Got support from both Democrats and Republicans. It'll put a fee on carbon that's totally refundable.
Right.
It'll reduce our carbon emissions by 40%.
Yeah, this is where the price of gas and the price of your, you know, your natural gas, if you heat your house with it, is going to go up. But you're also going to get a check from the government that's equal to roughly the exact same amount.
The average individual will end up about $500 a year ahead after taking into consideration the increased prices.
Obviously. Yeah, not to mention that it'll save the planet. This is the mistake that Macron made. He did the carbon tax, but he didn't do the rebate part, and it really upset people. Tom, thank you for the call. Sean in Somerville, South Carolina. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey there. I've been listening to you for quite a few years at this point. I would like to go ahead and thank you for continuing to fight the good fight.
You're welcome.
Yes, sir. I know you've in the past also been a supporter of a Medicare for All. I'm a beneficiary of the ACA in a way. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for it.
Oh, my.
I've had multiple heart surgeries at this point. I'm 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to end up kind of echoing the previous caller, the effects of climate change. I'm going to obviously be living through that undoubtedly at this point.
Yeah,
it's unconscionable that they don't do anything about it.
Yeah, it really is, and especially when Europe is doing something about it. I mean, there's a number of European countries that are just way ahead of goals, and actually a few American cities that are way ahead of goals. And I think California as a state is ahead of goals, but of the Paris Agreement goals. But those goals are now considered nothing close to what we've got to do. We've got to move ahead much more rapidly. So, Sean. Spot on. Thank you. Thank you for the call. I wish you all the
yes,
very
sir.
Best.
Thank you very much, and I wish you well, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, saved by the ACA. It's amazing. I mean, people call up and say, literally, Barack Obama and the Democrats in the House and Senate saved this guy's life. Saved his life. Think about that for a minute. I mean, that's really a high calling in politics.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And then you look at the Republicans, and they're not interested in saving anybody's lives. They just want to be toadies for the gun industry and the fossil fuel industry and make as much money as they can. And welcome back, David in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
Hi. Welcome from the land of the 900-foot Jesus.
900-foot Jesus?
Yeah, Oral Roberts.
Oh.
Back in the 70s, if God was going to take him back, if he didn't get $35 million.
That's right. Did he get the money?
Oh, yeah.
And he built the Jesus?
He built the city, the skyscraper in the Oral Roberts University.
Yeah, I remember that.
I wanted to also remind you of something that you haven't mentioned. You've forgotten. Molly Ivins said... the Republicans, they don't want to govern. They want to rule.
Mm.
And that's the absolute truth.
Yes.
And this whole thing is to get rid of the New Deal. They want to get rid of the New Deal. They want to get rid of Great Society. They don't have anything to replace it with.
Right.
There's no ideas there. They just want
Well, they don't think there should be a replacement. They believe that the purpose of government should be to run the military and the police, and that's it.
And they don't have any patience with... studies, they don't want to do pilot programs, they don't want to get consensus, they want to rule by decree. They want to say, this is the way it is, we need to know better than you do, and that's that.
Yep. By the way, the Senate just confirmed Wheeler as the head of the EPA, so we now have I believe he was a coal industry lobbyist, either coal or oil.
I'm sorry, this is the lad Scott Pruitt who was suing the EPA, instead of going after the bankers.
Right.
It's so funny that they're so criminal conscious when they talk about people that are undocumented.
Yeah.
But they have no problem with bankers and stuff. I mean, Kevin Stitt, our governor, he was one of the worst mortgage people. Now we've got guns. Everybody can have a gun now.
Right. Yeah. It's
all I'm waiting for is for them to legalize dueling.
Yeah. That's that might be the stand your ground laws. David, I need to move along, but thank you for the call. Gene in Guerneville, California. Am I saying it right, Gene?
Yeah.
What's up?
Oh, yeah, you got it. Oh, boy, I love your show.
Thank you.
Well, seems like the theme is the love of money is the root of all evil. And that goes back to the Cohen testimony the other day and good old AOC.
Yeah.
She really nailed him. And the thing I would like to see furthered up on is the stuff that's leading to the Russian mafia connections of Trump.
Right.
Trump was fined in 2015, before the election, by FinCEN, $10 million for money laundering at the Taj Mahal. What scares me now is you hear how he's messing up with his appointments to different federal agencies.
Right.
I'm hearing that he's messing with FinCEN personnel.
Of course.
And at Treasury. Now, that scares the living daylights out of me, because whatever those guys at FinCEN know, and stuff, they're like, that's like the NSA of the Treasury.
What is FinCEN?
FinCEN is the Financial Financial Crimes Enforcement Network.
Ah.
So okay. FinCEN, capital C, capital E, capital N, but right. FinCEN. So if you Google up FinCEN Taj Mahal, you're going to come up with that article.
Right.
And right up. And then in addition to that, before the election, the Australians denied Trump a casino license years ago.
Right, because of his mob connections. Yeah,
yes.
I remember that. Gene, good stories that need to be brought up. Should have been brought up yesterday, frankly. Good stuff. Gene, thank you very much for the call. And I'll have to Google FinCEN here. We'll be back, or DuckDuckGo, actually. We'll be right back. Oh, welcome back. RJ in Greenville, Michigan, listening on 1680 AM. Hey, RJ, what's up?
Hey, Tom, good to hear from you, and good to hear your voice on the radio every day.
Thank you.
Did I hear you say at one time you were a former member of the NRA?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. And they drove me away back during Clinton with all the lunatic speech. But, you know, the minute that I heard that the NRA was involved with the Russians, I knew we could be in trouble. And I dare say, you know, I don't have real hard evidence of this or hard membership rolls or anything, but I dare say that the vast majority of members in the NRA are either former or current members of our armed forces. And this leads me to believe that we never should have allowed for a volunteer army.
Well, I've always felt that a draft is a good thing, because it creates diversity in the military, and that's not just racial diversity, but economic diversity, geographic diversity. Right now, the military is very, very heavily tilted toward people from the South and people from very low socioeconomic status. And so you're getting a certain level of homogeneity that is, in my opinion, dangerous, destructive.
You know, I didn't believe for a long time, I didn't believe we should have the draft, just because, you know, of what my brothers.
Oh, I protested against the draft when I was 17.
No, I'm a firm believer in we should have the draft, because, you know, it's the only way that we can, that the members of the armed forces and the population can actually say, no, enough is enough.
Yeah.
And what I'm a little afraid of is that, like you're saying, if there is an insurrection, Mr. Trump already has a little voluntary lunatic army.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This could get ugly. It really could.
Well, you're hearing those kind of predictions from some of these guys on the right. I mean, they're actually using the phrase civil war now more and more.
Right,
I mean,
right. You know. And you know, the more they start speaking in those terms, I'm afraid with them, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you know what I mean. They tend to believe one another, and they don't believe in any logic, any truth. It's their reality or nothing. And that's what really scares me. And I hope we can find a way to defuse this situation somehow.
Well, there's a cult within that movement that most people are unaware of. Tim McVeigh is probably the best example, just because of how many people he killed. And he had read this book called The Turner Diaries, which was written back in the 70s. And it's become this cult novel for these guys. And in fact, you know, I encourage people to read it. It's really quite stark.
It's scary.
Pardon?
It's scary.
Yeah, so you're familiar with the book, RJ.
I read it.
Yeah, and
I actually had a neighbor give it to me.
Yeah, there. Well, that tells you a lot.
Six boys, and all of them are being trained right now as we speak in using automatic weapons. I mean, semi-automatic weapons.
Well, for people who don't know what we're talking about, RJ, in the Turner Diaries, basically the narrative of the story is that this guy, the hero of the book, blows up the federal building in Oklahoma City. This causes the federal government to overreact to his act of domestic terrorism and clamp down and say, okay, that's it, no more guns in the United States. And the police departments are ordered to start going door to door and getting guns. And meanwhile, there was another piece to it that had to do with race, the white people, the good white gun owners basically rose up. Correct me if I'm wrong here, RJ, it's been 20 years since I read the book, rose up against the people of color, against Jews, against Catholics, and against the police forces, basically, took down the federal government, killed off, everybody that, that list that I just described, and these white evangelical Christians were the only ones that were left, and, you know, with this noble country, right? That was the end of the Turner Diaries.
Yeah.
And that's what Tim McVeigh thought he was going to create.
Yeah. I mean, this is what these people believe in. And, you know, I live in an area surrounded, absolutely surrounded by the lunatic fringe.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's damn scary stuff. It's very scary stuff.
How much Klan activity, how much.
RJ, I grew up in Michigan.
I
have friends in high school whose fathers were parts of the Michigan militia. RJ, I want to get one more call in here before the end of the show, so thank you for the call. Russ in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Russ, your thoughts on the peaceful transition?
I just wanted to say, Tom, I'm glad to hear you talking the way you're talking about the very real possibility that we could have civil war in this country. Back in 2016, my girlfriend directed me to a blog written by the son of a childhood friend of hers, and he was basically saying, you liberals had better vote for Donald Trump, or we're going to bring civil war down on your heads. And if I may mention something here, if people want to get an inside look at what's going on, there's a book that was published in 2018 called Chosen Country, A Rebellion in the West by James Pogue. Very talented young millennial gentleman who wrote this book. He infiltrated the redneck Mormons who took over the Malheur Wildlife Refuge.
Mm-hmm.
And that, if you read that book, and you, this is extremely well written, it is not hard to read, you will get an idea what's going on in this country. And don't, like you said about the military, don't, if these people do make a move on the liberals, etc., and I'm talking about these rednecks and these Christo fascists, as I call them, they're the ones. Michelle Goldberg's book, Kingdom Coming, is another one that people need to read.
Yeah, Russ, I got a bail here, but thank you. Noted. In fact, I saw Sean writing down those titles and authors. Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, with more great radio. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. That means you. So please, get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.